President Trump appreciated the briefing and said he would meet Kim Jong-un by May.
President Trump will meet with North Korean leader Kim Jong-un by May. It's Friday, March 9th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm David Byrd in Washington. Remember, you're a part of the program. Join us on VOA Asia Facebook. Also ahead, President Trump announces new tariffs on foreign steel and aluminum. Rohingya refugees face a threat from elephants in Cox's Bazar. And we'll visit a pop-up market that is helping refugee women earn a living in the United States. It's all on today's VOA Asia. North Korean dictator Kim Jong-un says he is eager to meet with U.S. President Donald Trump for talks as soon as possible. South Korea's National Security Advisor Chung Eui-yon made the historic announcement outside the White House Thursday night.
North Korean leader Kim Jong-un said he is committed to denuclearization. Kim pledged that North Korea will refrain from any further nuclear or missile tests. He understands that the routine joint military exercises between the Republic of Korea and the United States must continue. And he expressed his eagerness to meet President Trump as soon as possible.
Chung said Thursday evening that he had briefed President Trump and said Trump would like to meet with Kim by May.
President Trump appreciated the briefing and said he would meet Kim Jong-un by May to achieve permanent denuclearization. The Republic of Korea, along with the United States, Japan, and our many partners around the world, remain fully and resolutely committed to the complete denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula.
Chung also announced U.S.-South Korean military exercises near the Korean Peninsula will continue to take place in April as planned, and that Kim Jong-un understood such exercises are necessary. Chung said his country would continue what is known as the maximum pressure strategy, along with the United States and its allies, to make sure Pyongyang follows its words with actions.
The Republic of Korea, the United States, and our partners stand together in insisting that we not repeat the mistakes of the past, and that the pressure will continue until North Korea matches its words with concrete actions.
Late next month, South Korean President Moon Jae-in and North Korea's Kim Jong-un are scheduled to meet at a border village for talks. It will be the third such meeting between the two sides since their 1945 division. These are among the top Asia stories trending on VOAnews.com. Trump agrees to meet with Kim by May. Analysts say Trump administration lacks experts needed for North Korea talks. General says Beijing needs to arm South China Sea islands. Suspected U.S. drone strike in Afghanistan kills key Pakistani militants. And Paralympics are set to open in Pyeongchang. Expanded coverage of these stories and more is on Facebook at VOA Asia and on the VOAnews.com website. Thanks for being with us. U.S. President Donald Trump on Thursday signed companion proclamations slapping 25% tariffs on steel coming into the country and a 10% tariff on imported aluminum. In an announcement Thursday afternoon, the president said that he was making these moves to protect the U.S. economy and national security.
Our industries have been targeted for years and years, decades, in fact, by unfair foreign trade practices leading to the shuttered plants and mills, the laying off of millions of workers, and the decimation of entire communities. And that's going to stop, right? It's going to stop.
The across-the-board taxes are set to go into effect in 15 days. The president said that the tariffs are in response to actions by other countries that have hurt the U.S. steel and aluminum industries.
Other countries have added production capacity that far exceeds demand and flooded the world market with cheap metal that is subsidized by foreign governments, creating jobs for their country and taking away jobs from our country.
Surrounded by U.S. steel and aluminum workers, the president said that he was keeping a promise made during his campaign and said the tariffs could be relaxed if other countries can assure that their products will not damage the U.S. economy. Mr. Trump also said that his administration would look at allies, including Australia and European countries and NATO members, who do not deal fairly with the United States.
One other thing, some of the countries that we're dealing with are great partners, great military allies, and we're going to be looking at that very strongly. The tariffs don't go effective for at least another 15 days, and we're going to see who's treating us fairly, who's not treating us fairly. Part of that's going to be military. Who's paying the bills, who's not paying the bills?
Steelworker Dusty Stevens said that the tariffs will help his plant in Kentucky return to 100% capacity and employ hundreds of people.
My father worked in the industry and worked at that plant for 40 years, so this hits home for all of us at Hallsville. By these tariffs going into place, this gives us the ability to come back to 100% capacity, investing over $100 million to our plant, and over 300 and some odd jobs will be brought back to the communities.
After an outcry from lawmakers, some industry executive and foreign governments, Canada and Mexico are being given specific exemptions from the tariffs for an indefinite period while the North American Free Trade Agreement is under negotiations. However, President Trump said if the NAFTA negotiations do not turn out favorably, his administration would terminate the deal. The president added that he thought the deal would be made. At the end of Thursday's event, a reporter asked President Trump about steel transshipments from China. He said, "We're going to stop the transshipping," but then quickly added that if any such shipments are to continue, in his words, "it'll cost a lot more money." Democratic Senator Sherrod Brown from Ohio told VOA that China has continued to cheat by subsidizing land and energy and water and capital, and they will continue if we don't draw a line. Republican Senator Jeff Flake of Arizona said he is introducing a law to nullify the tariffs, while the chairman of the Senate's Finance Committee, Republican Orrin Hatch of Utah, criticized the president's action but expressed hope of working with the Trump administration to, in his words, mitigate the damage. President Trump signed the proclamation just hours after 11 other countries formalized a revised agreement that reduces tariffs and cuts trade barriers among the member nations. Known as the Comprehensive and Progressive Agreement, it replaces the Trans-Pacific Partnership, which President Trump pulled the United States out of early in his administration. The countries joining the CPTPP include Australia, Brunei, Canada, Chile, Malaysia, Mexico, Japan, New Zealand, Peru, Singapore, and Vietnam. The president's announcement did not have a negative effect on Wall Street. The Dow Jones Industrial Average closed up 0.38%. The S&P 500 was up 0.45% by Thursday's close. We have this news update. A suspected American airstrike in northeastern Afghanistan destroyed a Pakistani Taliban-run suicide bombing training center, killing more than 20 militants. Afghan officials confirmed few details of the attack Thursday, one day after it occurred in the Kunar province bordering Pakistan. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're glad you're with us on this Friday. I'm David Byrd in Washington. Nearly 700,000 Rohingya Muslims have fled Myanmar to neighboring Bangladesh following a crackdown by Myanmar's military after militant Rohingya attacked a police station last August. Hundreds of thousands of refugees have crowded into Cox's Bazar. They face the threat of disease and the monsoon season. But as Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva, the UN Refugee Agency says they now also face dangers from herds of elephants that migrate through the area.
More than 670,000 Rohingya have fled to Bangladesh since August, escaping violence and persecution in Myanmar. Most of them are living in the Kutupalong refugee settlement in Cox's Bazar, the world's largest refugee camp. The refugees are faced with multiple threats, including disease outbreaks, malnutrition, and risks to their lives from the imminent monsoon and cyclone season. Added to this is a new danger posed by their unexpected and potentially life-threatening interaction with wildlife. The UN Refugee Agency reports the area now occupied by the Kutupalong refugee settlement has been for a long time an important habitat for Asian elephants. Spokesman Andre Mahechich says about 40 elephants in the area move between Bangladesh and Myanmar in search of food.
As a result of the interaction now between the refugees and the wildlife, we had the situation where 10 refugees have been killed in incidents where the elephants have come into the camp and also not only killed people, but also destroyed whatever little property they had.
Mahechich says the UNHCR has teamed up with the International Union for Conservation of Nature to protect refugees from more dangerous encounters. He says the IUCN has been working with communities in Bangladesh for decades to help them live safely alongside wild elephants. He says 17 highly trained elephant response teams already are on watch in the camp. He says these people know how to approach an elephant, how to deter the animal from entering the camp, and keep everyone safe. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Coming up, we'll visit a pop-up market that helps refugee women, and a British company helps give virtual life to children's literature. You're listening to VOA Asia.
Hi, my name's Larry London. Welcome to Border Crossings, your request and dedication program here at the Voice of America. 1500 Universal, Monday through Friday, we're there for an hour playing your favorite music. You can send an email in and request your favorite songs by your favorite artists. You can also phone in as well. We have great contests and surprise guests from time to time. Border Crossings, every single day during the week at 1500 Universal, here on the Voice of America.
We have this news from VOA Asia. Singapore's government says the collision of a U.S. Navy destroyer with an oil tanker last year was caused when the warship made a sudden turn into the tanker's path. 10 sailors aboard the guided missile destroyer USS John McCain were killed near the Strait of Malacca in Singaporean territorial waters. Visit VOA Asia Facebook each day for top stories and great features. This is VOA Asia. When refugees arrive in a new country, they bring little to no material possessions. But many bring something more valuable, their skills and their talents. 20 refugee women and asylum seekers from different parts of the world recently came together at a pop-up store in Phoenix, Arizona, to display their homemade products and to tell their stories. VOA's Jun So spoke with some of the women in this report narrated by Carol Pearson.
I am from Iraq. I was art teacher, and I have two boys. One, my young boy, he's killed in Baghdad. I decide to went to Turkey with my another son because I want to protect him. And after that, I came to Arizona.
I escaped from Syria when the war started, because there was no safety and no opportunities for my kids to continue their education, and because my husband's restaurant got burned down to ashes.
We escaped from Afghanistan, me, my mom, and my two sisters, because of safety, and there was no good opportunities for ladies to go to school, to do a job, to be independent.
The details and the countries may be different, but their stories are strikingly similar. More than 20 refugee women, leaving sad and sometimes tragic pasts behind, for the opportunity to sell their homemade products at this donated retail space in downtown Phoenix. A team of graduate social work students at Arizona State University created the Global Market pop-up store to help these women become self-sufficient.
The Global Market Project was developed in a collaboration between local nonprofits in Arizona State. The way that we designed this project is by using a concept from the world of business, which is a pop-up store, and integrated into the world of nonprofits.
The American Muslim Women's Association, or AMWA, is one of the support groups.
Last year, we started a new beginning skills training program for refugee women. We teach them how to sew and then help them sell those items to the community.
Among the items for sale are handicraft arts, aprons, soap and organic body care, international sweets, paintings, jewelry, and more.
Pop-up store, it's good for me because I bring all my stuff here. It was only in my home. I sold some of my painting. Like today, I sold 2 painting and some of my jewelry. I'm happy with this shop.
But organizers have a long-term vision.
The goal of the project is not only to bring these women short-term income, we want to really provide them with the experience of learning how to run their own business and learning how to be entrepreneurs.
The goal resonates with Tara Albarazanji, who sells her homemade soaps and body care products.
This pop-up market gave me the experience of working in a shop, dealing with people, dealing with cash, and knowing how to make the books, and talking about my products. It gave me the exposure that I was looking for.
Organizers hope visitors to the store learn something as well.
It offers an educational opportunity for the customers to come in and interact with people from different parts of the world and learn their stories and learn what is a refugee and what does it mean to come from another part of the world having nothing to begin with.
For producer June So, I'm Carol Pearson, VOA News, Phoenix, Arizona.
That pop-up market was open for last month only, but organizers say that they have plans for similar markets to help refugee women. To see video of this story, visit our website, voanews.com. This news from VOA Asia. The Korea Paralympic Committee said Thursday North and South Korea will not march together at today's opening ceremony of the Winter Paralympics because of a disagreement over whether to include islands, which are in a dispute with Japan, on a unified team flag. All the big stories come your way through the day on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. We're glad you're with us on this Friday. I'm David Byrd in Washington. Classic children's books are getting a 21st century upgrade. As Elizabeth Chernoff tells us, British researchers have begun testing a project that would bring 3D versions of children's stories to life on gaming platforms.
The mystical world of the classic book Treasure Island springs to life on 9-year-old Dylan's iPad. It's part of a project from British researchers to bring 3D representations of books to virtual platforms.
Is our innovative attempt to introduce all these fantastic literary worlds to a brand new audience. We thought, why not adapt it using one of the most popular resources, software resources out there, Minecraft, and bring these worlds to life.
Using video gaming software, researchers blend fantasy and reality, bringing imaginary worlds of literature to life.
If you're only mapping the real world, you're probably only mapping about 10-20% of literary texts, because many texts take place in different environments that are not, don't correspond to the real world.
Experts hope the dynamic mapping will help a new generation of readers fall in love with classic novels.
Rather than seeing the game version as, you know, the bad version of the book, what our project tries to do is to link both text and image together and to move between. So a lot of the educational stuff we're doing is starting with the text, going into the immersive environment, the gaming environment, and coming back to the text, and actually connecting those two together really positively.
For kids like Dylan, reading and experiencing books interactively opens up a world of possibility.
Because it's like a video game, you get to choose what you want to do in it. So, like, if you read a story, like, you have to follow the rules in your head as a story. But, like, with a video game, you don't have to do that.
Elizabeth Chernoff, VOA News, Washington.
For the past 10 years, local authorities here in Washington, D.C., have been renovating public libraries, hoping to create community hubs in spaces where people once went only to read books. VOA's Yulia Yarmolenko recently visited one of our city's new innovative libraries, and Faith Lapidus narrates her report.
Welcome to the West End Library in Washington, D.C. We're two blocks away from the State Department on the west side of the city. This is a brand new building. This is the first public-private partnership with a public library in a building.
This library is located on the first floor of a new mixed-use building in Washington. Local authorities gave developers the plot of land where an outdated public library stood. One of the conditions was that the developers had to build a state-of-the-art public library as part of their project.
Frankly, that's great for a number of reasons. For taxpayers in the city, they get a library that would otherwise have cost probably about $20 million. We get it at little or no cost, and that's money that you can put to other public benefits.
The new facility looks nothing like an old-school library and even has a coffee shop on site. No classic rules apply here. Eating and drinking are allowed, so is cell phone use and even talking.
You can't come in with like a stereo, but if you look around, you see people having conversation, working together. We no longer, like that's not a thing we do anymore. We encourage people to interact with one another. We encourage people to engage. We're really more of a common area than a silent reading place.
Along with 40,000 books and an audio and multimedia division, the library also provides more than two dozen computers for people to use, along with free internet and Wi-Fi.
Our central mission is still about literacy and reading, but literacy is more than just a book. There's computer literacy, there's technology literacy.
Everyone with a library card has access here to a 3D printer and even sewing machines. D.C. officials want libraries like this to become community centers, serving the needs of local residents. They also host a range of classes for adults and the always popular story time for kids. More than 4 million items were borrowed or downloaded from D.C. public libraries last year. Even though it's almost impossible to track how many people actually visit the libraries every year, officials say they are gaining in popularity. For writer Yulia Yarmolenko, I'm Faith Lapidus, VOA News, Washington.
And women across the world marked International Women's Day on Thursday with protests, demonstrations, and marches, along with dancing, singing, and pot banging. Women in Spain kicked off their first nationwide strike on International Women's Day with a pot banging protest at midnight in Madrid on Thursday. Women healthcare workers joined the strike outside Madrid's Princesa Public Hospital. Thousands demonstrated in the Turkish border town of Hatay. Women from dozens of countries set off from Istanbul to Hatay as part of a conscience convoy, calling for freedom for Syrian women in jail. Demonstrations were also held in Taipei, where women braved rain with umbrellas and raincoats, holding up banners reading "No means no" and "Our bodies, our minds." And in Saudi Arabia, the first female running group, Bliss, went on a historic run through the old town of Jeddah. You've been listening to VOA Asia. Thanks for being with us. You can get our program on iTunes, and you can find it on SoundCloud. Download our podcast and take VOA Asia with you. You can find that at voanews.com. And be sure to let us hear from you on VOA Asia Facebook, or you can email us, voaasia@voanews.com. Thank you for being with us on this Friday, and thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Kelvin Fowler. I'm David Byrd in Washington. Enjoy the day.